Penguin Random House Audio presents Hell's March by Taylor Anderson. Read for you by PJ Oakland. To my dad, and that entire fast dwindling generation of heroes who stood in the light to hold back the darkness and formed me in so many ways. One was to recognize the very stark difference between good and evil, while understanding that no human endeavor can be all one or the other. But mostly good isn't just slightly better than mostly evil. Still reeling from the traumatic passage from their Earth to this very different one, the people we first referred to as 1847 Americans, due to the year they arrived, since we knew little more about them, were even less prepared to comprehend their circumstances than we were when the decrepit U.S. Asiatic Fleet destroyer USS Walker was essentially chased to this world by the marauding Japanese in 1942. Still, in surprisingly short order, Lewis Casey, formerly of the 3rd U.S. Artillery, consolidated all the surviving artillerymen, infantrymen, dragoons, mounted rifles, and a handful of Texas Rangers, even a few Mexicans who'd been unluckily nearby on shore, from 3 appalling shipwrecks. Regardless of their confusion, the terrifying lethality of this world quickly convinced Casey that they must all work together or die. Particularly after he discovered that the savage, unimaginable beasts all around them were the least of their concerns. Humans can be far more monstrous than the strangest, most ferocious animals, and the savage Holcano Indians, their few but shockingly Greek-like allies, and of course the vile, blood-drenched Holy Dominion, became a constant looming menace. In less than a year, Lewis Casey and his capable companions had united various city-states on the oddly shaped Yucatan Peninsula against the long-feared Dominion and its Holcano proxies, built and trained an army, and repulsed a numerically superior but arrogant to the point of incompetence Dom army at the Battle of the Washboard. It was a stunning victory that convinced the locals they had a chance to live free from fear of the most significant, diabolical power known to dwell in the Americas of this world. But Lewis Casey knew that wasn't the case. The Dominion was obsessed with conquest and blood sacrifice and would never allow his new people to live in peace. Any example of successful defiance would erode Dominion tyranny over its own people and had to be exterminated. Moreover, a purely defensive stance was ultimately doomed to failure. The Dominion had to be beaten, and the only way to do that was to attack. Excerpt from the foreword to Courtney Bradford's Lands and Peoples, Destiny of the Damned, Volume 1, Library of Alexandra Press, 1959. Chapter 1. November 1847. 1st Division, Nautla, Yucatan Peninsula. The sun stood bright and hot over the ruined city of Nautla on the west coast of the Yucatan, which was being hacked back out of the dense surrounding forest, even while other labor was underway to reclaim it. Like the larger, even more ancient Campeche to the south, it boasted finely fitted stone walls around impressive dwellings and other structures, as well as the seemingly ubiquitous central stepped pyramid that appeared to grace every city of any size in the region. Unlike distant Campeche, however, Nautla's condition wasn't a result of centuries of neglect. Right on the edge of the contested lands, or La Tierra de Sangre, largely controlled by Holcano Indians and furry, feathery, extremely ferocious, Greek-like beings. These struck most as a terrifying cross between vultures and alligators with their upright physiques, raptor claws, and toothy jaws. Nahuatl had received too much attention over the last several decades. First conquered by Hulcanos about 50 years earlier, it became almost a traditional battlefield for Hulcanos and Oselomé Jaguar warriors to trade back and forth. The Oselomé were never as numerous and used imaginative tactics, especially after the arrival of Har Kaska and his Mi Anaka, vaguely cat-like folk from an unnamed land shipwrecked there 20 years before. They finally made a serious attempt to permanently liberate the city a decade ago, but never induced enough people to return and make it prosper. They gave up. It had belonged to the Hulcanos ever since, though its only real inhabitants were bands of wild Garaches, essentially young feral Grick that hadn't joined a tribe. They were a menace to everyone, even their own species, and Grick and Hulcanos both hunted and ate them. Despite years of fighting in and around Nahuatl, the combatants hadn't possessed the means to seriously damage its durable structures, and it remained largely intact. Troops under the command of the Blood Cardinal Don Frutos of the Holy Dominion, a power based on a warped mix of centuries-old Spanish Catholic Christianity and Mayan Aztecan blood ritual, dominating most of what should have been Mexico and Central America, and bent on conquest and subjugation, had briefly bombarded it when they passed through. They'd only been exercising their guns crews in preparation for knocking down the walls of the independent northern coastal city of Uxmal when they got there, so the damage hadn't been severe. But Don Frutos had been stopped short of his objective at the Battle of the Washboard by a small army led by Major Luis Casey, composed of recognizably Christian natives of the Yucatan and their pagan Oselomé protectors, and trained by American castaways from another Earth who'd been bound for a different Veracruz to join Winfield Scott's campaign against the President of Mexico. And just like this different Earth, the geography of war had changed very little. The ultimate enemy, besides the land itself and wildly ferocious predators, styled himself His Supreme Holiness, Messiah of Mexico, and by the grace of God, Emperor of the World, and ironically ruled from the same, but different, Valley of Mexico. Major Casey's roughly 700 American survivors were no longer engaged in a political war, however, a spat between neighboring countries over past grievances and territory. They joined in a war of survival against an existential threat and had a cause they could all believe in. Build a strong union of threatened city-states, oppose the Dominion, and hopefully survive. The odds were very long indeed. Major Casey followed his victory over the Doms by marching his still largely American detached expeditionary force and the 1st Uxmal and 1st Oselomé regiments down to fortify Nahuatl into an impassable strong point astride the Camino Militar. So far, the most difficult tasks had been rooting out Garaches, repairing the walls and backing them with earth to better resist Dom artillery, and cleaning out years of accumulated filth to make the place tolerably sanitary. The first priority in this respect had been to fill in the hopelessly fouled freshwater wells and dig new ones. Nahuatl was alive again in a sense, but as a formidable fort, not a city. It was in this light Luis Casey surveyed it now, standing on the south wall with a collection of his officers and some luminaries from Uxmal. Friends, he hoped and believed.
"This isn't exactly what I meant when I urged you to take the war to the Doms," said Alcaldesa Sira Perez in a dissatisfied tone.
Tiny, dark, and beautiful, she'd become the ruler of Uxmal when her husband was killed in a treacherous parley before the Battle of the Washboard began. Her suite of advisors included a shrewd, also beautiful Englishwoman named Samantha Wilde, and the oddly inseparable Reverend Samuel Harkin, a tall, bearded, overweight Presbyterian, and Father Orno, a short, slight Uxmalo priest from a vaguely Jesuit tradition. They'd been brought down by the wiry, craggy-faced Captain Eric Holland in HMS Tiger.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?